And we'll start with our films first. Up for review, Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, the last episode in the saga, we're told, at any rate. Director J.J. Abrams back at the helm. Cats, Andrew Lloyd Webber's 1980s musical brought to the big screen with an all-star cast and another big screen adaptation, this time of Louisa May Alcott's much-loved Little Women, Saoirse Ronan, Florence Pugh and Meryl Streep, among another all-star cast. And with me in studio on this Thursday evening to talk about all three films, Sir Taff McGuire and Daryl Jones. We'll start with Star Wars, the Rise of Skywalker. We did a lot on Star Wars earlier in the week, kind of setting ourselves up for this final episode in the saga. You were coming to it absolutely fresh, Daryl. Do you need to know much about even where we were at the end of the last film, the Last Jedi?
I don't think so. It struck me watching this that in broad terms, all Star Wars films have more or less exactly the same plot. So it doesn't really matter.
And what is that plot?
That plot is that an evil intergalactic empire builds a super weapon that can destroy planets, but a super weapon with a vulnerable niche and a vulnerable chink in its armor, and it's down to a plucky group of rebels to find that chink and destroy the super weapon.
And you know, if I'd only known that before I had to talk about 8 of the episodes on Tuesday, that'd have been very helpful. It is a good kind of summary of what, and of this, I presume as well, Sarah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I felt that compared to previous films, it also was quite formulaic. You know, you've got this end goal to reach, you're going to have a lot of lightsaber battles, a lot of shooting in ships, and then of course you're going to splice in some romance or allude to some romance, but I felt that you would have had to have an idea of what's going on in previous films. You know, so we have Kylo Ren, he is the First Order,
played
he's played by
Adam Driver, thank you.
And then we also have Rey, who's played by Daisy Ridley. Yep. So the two of them are both sort of looking internally, and because they're both have the Force within them, they're being pushed in directions, whether it might be to the dark side, to the good side, so we have to know who they are. And we also have the rebel forces who are led by Leia, played by Carrie Fisher, who though is dead, yes, yeah. So she's still been there for 3 years. So what they've done is they've got previous bits of footage of her and sort of made that work within the film. I'm not quite sure about the ethics of that has really been discussed.
Well, I guess it's more ethical. We spoke earlier in the week about James Dean being totally kind of reconfigured digitally to make a new film. Is that just on that Carrie Fisher thing as a bit of an aside? Does it work? Because I mean, it was a sudden death and people were quite taken aback by it. Is it a nice homage to her, in fact, to have archival footage in here?
It does work. It means that her presence on the screen is somewhat strange and inconclusive at various points. It fits in with an overarching theme of the whole thing, which is that death is not the end.
Right, so rebirth is a big theme here. And so maybe death is not the end of the Star Wars franchise either. There are a couple of spin-offs on the way. Give me a sense of the dark side, because I have a clip which pretty much features all of the dark sides that we've heard over the 9 episodes of Star Wars to date.
Well, the evil Sith are ruled over by the extraordinarily evil Emperor Palpatine, played by Ian McDiarmid, whom we thought had died way back at the end of The Return of the Jedi, when Darth Vader threw him off a spaceship. But it turns out, once again, that death is not the end, so that he hasn't died. He's back, and somehow, through mysterious means that are certainly never explained in the film, as far as I can see, has managed to gather not only an enormous army, but a vast fleet of star-destroying cruisers.
All right, so within this clip, we will hear Ian McDiarmid, I think, just laughing. In fact,
he did a lot of laughing.
There's a bit of evil laughing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll also hear the voice of Andy Serkis, who he's kind of pretending to be at another point as Snoke, and Darth Vader, the great James Earl Jones, is the voice that you will hear. So this is kind of the dark force presenting itself in its various manifestations.
Inside your head.
there's the laugh, mm-hmm. and there's the laugh, Ian McDermott. You're explaining to me that that's kind of what's happening to Kylo Ren as yeah, we're here, he's hearing those voices.
He's walking in, and Palpatine is explaining this to him, that he's not really dead, that Kylo Ren is now going to be the agent of the Dark Force. And what they're going to do is, rather than creating the First Order, is they're going to create the Last Order. And Adam Driver, Kylo Ren, is now directed to kill Daisy. And that's what motivates the film. Daisy's trying to get to this evil lair to kill Palpatine, and Kylo Ren is trying to kill her, and they sort of speak Daisy in being, their minds.
Yeah, Daisy Ridley being the Rey character.
Yeah, the Rey character, exactly.
She's the kind of the good side. There's a couple of other important characters, I suppose, within here is the John Boyega playing Finn Poe by Oscar Isaac, and of course Chewbacca is there as well. They're the kind of the rebel side of things. Presented and all represented pretty well, Daryl?
Yeah, they're all fine. There's really a sense I got from watching this that what we get here is the kind of greatest hits package. Bits of everything you'll like. So as you mentioned, we have snippets of James Earl Jones, snippets of Andy Serkis, snippets of all of these characters.
But we have actual appearances from
Billy Dee Williams turns up again as Lando Calrissian.
Harrison Ford as Han Solo.
Seen for ages. Yeah. Harrison Ford pops up, and so
Mark Hamill
as Luke Skywalker. He was meant to be dead too.
Just work on the assumption that they're all there.
So it's a kind of a bit of a curtain call for the all the actors as much as it is for the series
but
itself.
Also for the fans, and I think this is, you know, to make a serious point, I think one of the mistakes that the film makes for me is trying to please its fan base, its fan audience too much. So it ends up as a series of cameos of little bits and little things that we've loved before.
Right. So you don't get a kind of a through plot. You're agreeing with that, Sarah?
Yeah, well, while simultaneously racing to tie up all these loose ends and continue with the actual plot. Mm. So it really seems to be a giant race to the finish line rather than something about characters, about values, about bonding, about commonality and shared purpose, which is absent for the first part of the film. They also try and introduce new characters to keep it fresh, new lands.
And they're in the fine wrap-up. You don't need too many new characters.
Yeah, exactly. And there are already a number of questions that were going to be left unanswered. A job of work to do before it began with all of the sidetracks. But then I think in the second hour, it does sort of find its connection when they unite together to kill the Sith.
Standout performances?
Adam Driver is actually in a much better film
than the rest of them.
Yeah, he brings a kind of intensity to all his roles. I mean, he's terrific. He's a terrific screen presence, and he's terrific.
He's nominated
as well.
Best Actor for Marriage Story, isn't he?
And quite rightly. And you know, he's giving the same order of intense performance here in a way that few of the others do. I have to say,
it's the same for you then.
Yeah, sorry, absolutely. Adam Driver can do no wrong at the moment.
Right. And J.J. Abrams back at the helm with Star Trek and now Star Wars. He does a good job here, does he?
Yeah, he does a fine job.
All right. So
much of the same, I felt.
I'm getting a sense of grand off both of you rather than anything else. So many stars
from
you, Sarah?
Yeah, I'm saying 3 to 5. It's not as bad as everyone makes out. They do sort of unite and share their common purpose. But again, too many characters, too many rops, or too much. It just takes on far too much and sacrifices the actual characters and the actual story.
Less is more. Daryl? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 3. I was never bored and it looks great.
I was never bored. Kind of damning with faint praise. Let's move on then to Little Women. Director Greta Gerwig here, starring Saoirse Ronan. Previously they worked together on the Oscar-nominated Lady Bird. I suppose a lot of people will be familiar with the Louisa May Alcott book, Little Women.
Yeah.
Was it a book you had read or did you come to the film fresh?
Oh,
Sarah?
years ago. But actually in preparation, I had watched the 1994 version of this.
This was with Winona Ryder
Gabriel Byrne was in there. And this is a much better film. Oh my gosh. You know, it's actually very faithful to text and it's a great way of doing period drama. So it will directly copy from introductions and from correspondence of the text into the film, but with this lovely new fresh way that brings humour and levity to it. So
we're talking about the Marr sisters. Yeah, so give us a sense of who they are.
So we've got Jo. She's played by Saoirse Ronan. She's the one. She's the writer. She's dedicated to her craft, fastidiously recording, you know, daily occurrences. Then we've got Amy. So she is a younger sister. She's kind of hot headed, and she wants to be a painter. We have Beth, who's played by Elizabeth Scanlon, and she is a pianist. And then the eldest we have is Emma Watson, and she's played by Meg.
Yeah, and she's kind of the caring
teacher. She's the caring sort of older one, the sensible one who keeps them all in check.
You're right. They also have an aunt played by Meryl Streep.
She's amazing in this.
Let's have a listen to Meryl Streep as Aunt March speaking to Saoirse Ronan's Jo.
Josephine!
Yes, dear.
Is there a reason you stopped reading Belsham?
I'm sorry. I'll continue.
You mind yourself, dearie. Someday you'll need me, and you'll wish you had behaved better.
Thank you, Aunt March, for your employment and your many kindnesses, but I intend to make my own way in the world.
Oh, well, no one makes their own way. Not really. Least of all a woman. You'll need to marry well.
But you are not married, Aunt March.
Well, that's because I'm rich.
And there she makes the point, doesn't she? Meryl Streep as Aunt March there, and Saoirse Ronan as Jo. It's set in and around the time of the American Civil War, Daryl, and that social setting and the mores and what was expected, the different gender roles that are to be played in that at that time. That's very much what's been spoken about here.
Absolutely, as is written into the title. You know, this is to a very significant extent a novel about women without men. Mr. March is off. He's a military chaplain off serving in the Civil War. Marmee, who's played by Laura Dern, is looking after the four girls with the help of the servants. So it's very much, I think, a novel about relations between women without men. And then into this world come the next door neighbours, most particularly Laurie, played by Timothy Chalamet here, who has close but ambiguous relationships with a number of the daughters, and his kind of reserved grandfather, played by Chris Cooper. So it's that kind of world that we're in.
But we're very much in that 19th century world, if you like. But then we've Greta Gerwig at the helm here. So does she bring a more of a contemporary sensibility to that?
Well, yeah, she does. But even if she didn't, I think the text is sort of, you know, in some ways relevant, the difficulties that women may face, you know, pitching to a publisher, navigating their way in the world. I mean, Saoirse Ronan, right at the beginning, as Jo March, has to say, I would like this amount of money. And then she has to sort of barter to retain her copyright. So, yes, it is, of course, a story of its time, but also incredibly relevant. And then Greta Gerwig brings that in new, interesting ways and almost kind of makes light of the text. So in one instance, we have Jo March scribbling away furiously, and then we have someone saying, "Wow, you're on fire," and she's like, "Ha, yeah, thanks," but she's actually literally on fire. But sort of the modern parlance being injected in makes it fresh to a new audience.
Yeah, I mean, there is a scene too, isn't there, with Saoirse Ronan pitching her book to a publisher, and he's basically saying, "Yeah, but you know, the heroine, she has to get married at
that's
the
right.
end."
Whoa, don't mess with the marriage.
And this actually conflates, you know, things that happened to Louisa May Alcott herself in the writing and publication of the novel, and her relations with her own publisher. So, And it's Jo who ends up writing Little Women.
Which is obviously a reflection of Louisa May Alcott herself. Let's listen to another clip just featuring the voice of Saoirse Ronan here, and it pretty much gets to the heart of what she's fed up with, Jo March.
I just feel like women, they have minds. And they have souls as well as just hearts. And they've got ambition and they've got talent as well as just beauty. And I'm so sick of people saying that love is just all a woman is fit for. I'm so sick of it. But I'm so lonely.
You were just saying that this is he has been proposed to, and she's turned down the proposal at this point.
And
in time.
I think she's regretting it. This is a moment where she's like, oh, damn it.
And lots of people, of course, will know how it all pans out. Yeah, but let's not go there, because people may be seeing it for the first time. I suppose when you have so many strong characters and well defined characters at the centre of a piece, we have to get to the strength of the performances. It depends on the performances to a large extent.
Well, yeah, I think so. What I found was the whole ensemble are excellent. The chemistry they have, the magnetism, and how they age so well. Unlike other incarnations of the film, this is all the same actor from 7 years into the modern times.
And they do CGI.
It so well.
No CGI. No bad makeup.
No bad makeup. It's all through characters and I guess some costume changes.
Yeah.
But it really makes it work, and it makes it less creepy than when Amy goes off with the older man I won't necessarily mention, rather than in the 1994 adaptation where there's like a little girl has this relationship with the older man, and then next scene, you know, later they're married. It's just terrifying.
It kind of doesn't fit together quite well. But were there any of the sisters, first of all, that stood out for you?
Yeah, well, for me, I mean, I love Florence Pugh in this as Amy. I think she was the one who's so childish and petulant, brusque, and then becomes mature. And she is so funny. She, yeah, you know, well,
people
it is
will know her from Midsommar. And I remember seeing her a couple of years back. I think it was her debut feature film, Lady Macbeth and Matansk. She was amazing.
Yeah, she is phenomenal. And I'm rather surprised that she wouldn't get a supporting actor nod. You know, while Saoirse Ronan is great, I did not feel she was better than her co-stars.
Yeah, and you, Darren?
I thought Saoirse Ronan was absolutely sensational. And I would be appalled if she doesn't get an Oscar for this. But the whole cast, they're all firing on all cylinders.
And the senior members, Laura Dern and Meryl Streep.
Laura Dern, Meryl Streep, Chris Cooper. It's impossible.
Bob Odenkirk as the father as well.
That's right. It's impossible to imagine a better cast in this film or for this film.
There should be an ensemble nomination in the Oscars, really, shouldn't there? Because sometimes that's what it's about.
And that's what's going on here. And it is, in some ways, it's invidious to single out any one performance. But Saoirse Ronan, it's just magnificent.
What about the fact that the Golden Globe nominations, that Greta Gerwig was not there? How unusual there wasn't a woman nominated for Best Director.
I think you
expect her to be there for the Oscars? Were you disappointed by that?
Yeah, and I was. I mean, this film just looks beautiful. The colours are wonderful. There's so many stills I'd love to hang on my wall. You know, so many, even the outfits I found as I wanted to wear a floor-length skirt and a poofy shirt, which I'm actually doing right now. Come here. And then like some sort of velvet waistcoat. All of it just looked gorgeous and really what you wanted to dive into. Excellent job visually.
Yeah, and I think you both felt the set design was amazing. I wanted
to live in this film. I just thought it was gorgeous. The houses, the sets were lovely. They're lovely beyond words. Yeah. I really thought they were.
And really Christmassy as well. Perfect time of year for it. I'm surprised maybe it isn't even coming out earlier to get that December run.
Because it is of the films we're discussing. It's coming out on the 26th, in fact. But that's often the big day for people in the cinema.
Yeah.
They get out of the house on the 26th and go to the cinema. That's their way of kind of re-engaging with the world after the quietness of the 25th. Sounds like you both had a great time at this. What are you saying, stars, first of all, Daryl?
I will, and I lost my heart to this film, and you will also. Five,
Daryl. Now, you don't throw out the fives too often.
No, I'm saying four. There were definite problems. It flits an awful lot through time, location, space, sisters. Yeah. And when it's a one actor playing some 7 years of difference, that gets really confusing. You're not sure how a character ended up in this place, why they're there. So I found that very difficult and confusing for the first hour as well, because there's such a small army of cast and context to introduce. I felt that got a little lost and I wasn't sure where I was going. Nonetheless, really enjoyable. 4 out of 5 stars.
4 out of 5, right. So a little bit of confusion in the storytelling, as far as you were concerned, Sarah.